Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson. And I was just out in the Storm Center patio in shirt sleeves, December 13th. And the good news is that the rain seems to have let up here in downtown Chicago. And starting to see some people out on the street here. I'm in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue at Tribune Tower. And the city is coming awake. And hopefully we can have some extended periods where we're not going to get some rain. And maybe able to get some of that Christmas shopping done. I wanted to go back a little bit into our weekly spin through the national politics. And Florida Governor Jeb Bush, whose super PAC has spent a lot of money, but so far has little to show for it. Well, that super PAC came out with an ad that blasts Donald Trump and Bush's other rivals over who should be sitting in the Oval Office.
When the attacks come here, the person behind this desk will have to protect your family. Will he be impulsive and reckless like Donald Trump? Will he have voted to dramatically weaken counterterrorism surveillance like Ted Cruz? Will he have skipped crucial national security hearings and votes just to campaign like Marco Rubio? 27 generals and admirals support Jeb Bush because Jeb has the experience and knowledge to protect your family.
Now, I know he's not your guy, Pat Brady, who joins us now. Pat Brady, the former Illinois Republican chairman, and he's with Next Generation Strategies. But isn't it amazing the amount of money that the super PAC has spent? And, you know, here we've got them at 6% in the latest Iowa poll.
Yeah, and going the wrong direction, too. I think you're talking about the Des Moines Register poll,
correct,
too, that had Donald Trump down 10 to Ted Cruz. So there's been a big, and that's the second poll that has a similar result in Iowa. So maybe, and everyone, including myself, has said this before, maybe this is the beginning of the end for Trump. But I agree with you on Jeb Bush. As much as I like him, I'm a Kasich supporter, but as much as I like Governor Bush, he just hasn't seemed to get much traction, even with that. That ad's actually a pretty good ad, but I'm not sure if it might be too little too late.
Well, and you know, we are looking at some of these various polls, too, not just on the candidates themselves, but on the issues and how you've got, I think it's a CBS poll that says that the prime voter concern right now is fear of terrorism, and that's at the highest level since 9/11.
Yeah, and I think the president has created that void or that fear in the electorate. He just didn't meet the moment, either in the speech or the press conference after the Paris attack or the speech he gave last Sunday night. And I think a lot of Americans are afraid. There was some chatter on Twitterverse yesterday about that Chicago was actually one of the targets for ISIS. Not that they had any credible evidence of it, but it was in one of their discussions they had obtained. So I think a lot of people are scared, and I think the lack of leadership at the top has created an opportunity for a guy like Trump who will say anything at any time to talk about national security, and people are listening to it right now, apparently.
Which, and I was going to ask you how you see national security playing out in the Republican field, because, you know, here again, yeah, Trump willing to say anything, but you tend to kind of, I would think, look for candidates that have some kind of national experience, have been on the national stage.
Yeah, you know, you would think so, and you'd think that would be the one probably with the most experience is probably Governor Kasich from Ohio, from his time in Congress where he was on the Armed Services Committee, or I think he was even actually head of it. But even maybe to Governor Bush, who is the Bush, his experience as governor and just his family experience and his experience being around for a long time. But it doesn't seem to translate, although that is the top issue. But you know, the stuff like Trump did this week, which to me was just outrageous. He's going to ban Muslims from coming to the United States. Just outrageous stuff. So you would think that they would look to somebody with more experience. But Trump is saying the things that I think people are concerned about, unfortunately. He'd be a terrible commander-in-chief, but that's what the electorate seems to be focused on right now.
Well, and what, you know, with Trump's standing and actually sustainability, although that seems to be weakening in Iowa, what does that say about the Republican electorate?
Well, I met these people that are supporting Trump. These aren't just all Republicans in some of these polls. He's got a kind of a broad swath of people of all sides, all, you know, people on the spectrum that are supporting him because there is a genuine fear of an attack here. And there was one, actually. You know, there has been two or three now. So it's not just Republicans. I think it's a lot of voters are uneasy about national security right now. So he's playing right into that. Although I do think, and I will say this again, I do think you've seen this poll in Des Moines. He's losing ground in New Hampshire to Rubio. If he goes 0 for 2, he's not going to win down in South Carolina after that or the Super Tuesday primary. So if he goes 0 for 2, he's going to have a tough time getting the nomination. In fact, I don't think it's ever been done in the history of the party that if you lose the first two, you win the nomination.
Real Clear Politics is out with its average, which they've now factored in that new Des Moines Register Bloomberg poll. And it's the first time in Iowa that Cruz is up and Trump is in second place. Cruz up by 0.7% in their averaging of polls being done in Iowa. It's Cruz at 25%, Trump 24.3%, Ben Carson 14%, Rubio 12.7%, and Bush 5.3%. I do see in some respects, and we've kind of seen this in some of the polling, Ben Carson, who was here in Chicago last week, where some of his stumbles over the issue of national security, I think, have really, you know, caused him to stumble in the polls.
Yeah, I think that's true. And you know Iowa as well as anyone. And once you're at the top and you start heading down, you typically don't come back. Like Trump or Carson start going down, that should be the end of them in Iowa. I never thought Trump could win Iowa just because it's a caucus state and there's a lot of evangelicals that caucus. But he's got real problems if he starts getting behind in New Hampshire, which it looks like Rubio and others are closing the gap. But there's a good, I thought, interesting poll today. It was in the New York Times about the best matchup in the swing states, the ones we have to win as Republicans, Ohio, Florida, and Pennsylvania, that Marco Rubio actually beats Hillary Clinton in all those states right now in a head-to-head. But if you take Trump and put him as a third party, Republicans lose all those states. So the big threat, I don't think Trump's going to win the nomination, but the big fear for me is he does some third-party bid, just like Ross Perot did. And people forget that Bill Clinton never got over 50%, and Ross Perot picked up 18% of the vote in 92, which gave us President Clinton. So there's a real fear that he's going to do something like that.
Well, and of course, we've heard this talk now about Republicans that held a meeting talking about concerns about a potentially brokered Republican convention in Cleveland, which prompted both Trump and Carson to say that, well, if the establishment is working to try to cover its flanks, that doesn't preclude those pledges that were signed that said that they wouldn't run as a third-party independent candidate.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody really believes that the Donald when he signed that pledge, because remember when he did that, they asked him in the first debate whether he'd, you know, asked them all to raise their hands, and everybody raised their hand when they asked the question, would you vote for the nominee if it wasn't you? And he didn't raise his hand. Now, that's kind of death in a Republican primary. But to me, particularly, or only with Trump, when he talks about Republican establishment and all these things, I mean, Trump's given more money to Democrats than he's given to Republicans. So now this newfound Republicanism is kind of a head-scratcher for me. I mean, he gave $50,000 to Rahm Emanuel. He gave to Blagojevich. He's given to Hillary Clinton. So for him to say that the party owes him some sense of loyalty, I think it's a little bit disingenuous considering how much money he's given to Democrats. I mean, he was adamantly pro-choice 10 years ago. He thought that their single-payer health care system was a good idea 10 years ago. So somehow that he's claiming he's somehow harmed, or the Republican Party's not treating him fairly. He hasn't been a Republican for very long.
Well, and Pat, that's part of what I find confounding, because the stories of his giving to Democrats, his stories of his positions that are traditionally Democratic positions on social issues have been out there, and yet it's the the anger, the people not wanting political correctness for that kind of thing. I mean, yes, it's, and caucuses are different than going to vote in a primary, because caucuses really, you have to be invested. They can take a couple hours. You really have to be a party activist to attend these things. But still, at the same time, all those things about Donald Trump have been out there, and only now are maybe we starting to see some of that residual fall off that we all had expected months ago.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm I don't have an answer for why he's had the staying power he does. I still think that it's more of a celebrity factor. A lot of these national polls are name ID polls, and everybody knows who Donald Trump is. But the long-term sustainability of his campaign with the Democrat donations, the Democrat positions, the outrageous insults he's made to pretty much every group. He has an 80% disapproval rating amongst Hispanics, the group that we need to attract, any political party needs to attract to win. He's got an 80% disapproval rating. 7 in 10 voters disapprove of him nationally. So he's got so many problems. He'll never be commander-in-chief. The question to me is just how much damage is he going to do to the Republican Party that desperately needs to rebrand itself as a more inclusive party if we're going to win going forward. But it is a head scratcher. He's stayed around this long, but I do think he has tapped into a fear in this country that the president hasn't addressed and created that opportunity. However, obnoxiously he does it, there are a lot of people that are afraid right now.
We're speaking with Pat Brady, former Illinois Republican chairman. He's with Next Generation Strategies. I'm Rick Pearson in the Allstate Showcase studio. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. And on the phone is Pat Brady. You can hear Pat and I and Eric Edelstein often on Thursday mornings on the Steve Cochran Show with our little political roundtable. And Pat, thanks for getting up with me this morning.
No problem.
I wanted to, we were talking about Obama's address to the country last Sunday night, and I wanted to play a cut from that.
As we've become better at preventing complex, multifaceted attacks like 9/11, terrorists turn to less complicated acts of violence, like the mass shootings that are all too common in our society. It is this type of attack that we saw at Fort Hood in 2009, in Chattanooga earlier this year, and now in San Bernardino. And as groups like ISIL grew stronger amidst the chaos of war in Iraq and then Syria, and as the internet erases the distance between countries, we see growing efforts by terrorists to poison the minds of people like the Boston Marathon bombers and the San Bernardino killers. For 7 years, I have confronted this evolving threat each and every morning in my intelligence briefing. And since the day I took this office, I have authorized U.S. forces to take out terrorists abroad precisely because I know how real the danger is.
Now, you know, I watched this speech, as did many, but there are real questions here about, you know, providing a guidance for moving forward.
He didn't, and the speech was just more of the same old stuff that he said. He goes, you could sum that speech up and just keep doing what I'm doing. It's working, but I don't think the American public feels that it's working at all, and that there was nothing new in the speech, and that was really an opportunity for him to step up to the plate and talk about his plan and how it's going to work, because nobody thinks – The vast majority of people don't think what he's doing right now is working, and they're getting scared because these are on the home front. If you went through the four or five things that he's proposed or has been doing, not one of them's working. And the analysis after the speech by people that really know, the real foreign policy, national security experts, was pretty brutal, that he did not offer anything new, and we need something new or the threat's going to grow.
Well, now we've been noting about Ted Cruz kind of surging in Iowa, just looking on the Twitter, and David Axelrod notes that a plurality in that new Des Moines Register poll say Ted Cruz would be the one who would work most effectively with Congress. This would stun most in Congress, Republican or Democrat, Axelrod says. And yeah, that's an interesting, here again, there seem all of these incongruities between candidate
Ted Cruz
and support.
His only accomplishment in the Senate, and he is a first-term senator, just like Senator Obama was, his only accomplishment in the Senate to date is shutting the government down.
Which made nobody happy.
Nobody. He's not respected on either side of the aisle. Now, that's probably something that some people that are anti-Washington like to hear, but the reality is he'd be the most divisive guy that we could elect right now. But remember, as you know better than anybody, Iowa, you go up and down. New Hampshire, you go up and down. Does he have the staying power to make it through and actually win the nomination? I don't think he does, because he's just not a candidate. I think that he's going to get people are going to rally around.
Although he did get a major endorsement recently from Bob Vanderplatz, a prominent evangelical in Iowa. And as we always note, that the evangelicals are a significant part of that Republican voting bloc in the Iowa caucuses.
Yeah, but take Vanderplatz out of Iowa and bring him to some of the states we have to win. And I was just talking about Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, Illinois. And he'd be so far removed from the mainstream. I mean, he is as far right as you can get. Steve King, some of the people in Iowa, I mean, those aren't endorsements that are going to help you in a general election. And Ted Cruz might well win Iowa, but that won't carry over to New Hampshire or some of the other big states coming after that.
So what did you make of that meeting we talked about earlier with Reince Priebus and some of the other top national Republicans about expressing concern over a brokered national convention? Do you think that can happen?
No. And you know what? You and I have been watching these things forever, and always at this time during the process, there's a discussion of a brokered convention on the side that's actually having a contested primary. We heard that 8 years ago with Senator Obama and Secretary Clinton. I don't make much of it. And the more I read about the details of that meeting, I'm not sure if it was a meeting called for that. I think it was just a bunch of people meeting and talking and preparing. I mean, could it happen? Yes. Possibly. I don't think it's going to happen. And if it does, we'll handle it. And remember that the conventions are earlier this year. So if there is a bunch of acrimony coming out of that, we'll have a lot of time to fix it versus, you know, in previous years where the conventions have been late in the summer, actually, in the early fall. But I didn't make much of it. The more I read the story, the more I thought about it, I'm like, this really is not a story.
Well, but that was kind of my first response, too, is that this is kind of almost an every four-year story on either side, if there's a, you know, if there's a contested battle for the nomination. But when we get into, you know, March 15th in the Illinois primary, and I think we've got Ohio also up, Florida that day, Missouri is up that day. Obviously we're not going to play fortune teller here, but do you think we'll still have a pretty contested contest going on by the time we get to Illinois?
Yeah, I do remember. 4 years ago, Illinois was actually what put Romney over the top. So Illinois will be relevant in this election. There's another thing, and there was a political article about this, and you and I talked about it a couple months ago. When you get to Illinois, which has some pretty strict requirements to get on the ballot, you have to get 15,000 signatures, have a full slate of delegates. I'm not sure which of these campaigns actually has the ground game to put that together. So it might be a place that screens some people out, similar to kind of what Virginia was like in the last election cycle, where people may not even be on the ballot, at least a full slate of delegates. So Illinois is going to be critical from, a delegate count, and it's also going to be critical to see if all these candidates have the staying power to get beyond, middle of March.
Well, and filing for those presidential and delegate slates, that starts the first Monday after the New Year's. So there's plenty of activity going on of people soliciting, nominating petitions for presidential as well as delegate. And also, when we get to March 15th, that's, I think, the first wave of primaries that are not going to be proportional representation.
Right.
Based on how the candidates finish. And of course, Illinois is always kind of that interesting, unique case study where it's the presidential beauty contest that's at the top of the ballot, but it has nothing to do with delegates. You've got to go in and elect those 54 delegates that are on the ballot.
You know, back to the point we were talking about before, I was at the train stations this week getting signatures for Governor Kasich, and it's not scientific, certainly, but you kind of get a feel for the voters just by asking them for a signature and talking to them and being out there for 2 or 3 hours in the morning. I just don't think people are really super tuned in yet. Maybe that accounts for saying that Ted Cruz is the guy that can get things done in Congress or Donald Trump getting away with saying the things he says. I just don't think people are that focused yet.
Let the holidays go by, and then we go right into from the holiday season to the campaign season.
I did note this, though, that people are a lot friendlier when it's 58 degrees when you're on the train station than when it's 5 below. But people, I think people want to be interested, but I just don't think they're there yet.
Right. Well, hopefully if they're listening to us, they are interested. Pat Brady.
I think. I hope so.
Pat Brady, the former Illinois Republican chairman and consultant for Next Generation Strategies, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Have a good day.
You too. We'll be back with more right after this.